We are at Newton Wellesley Hospital, located in a wealthy suburb 12 miles outside of Boston. At this hospital, on February 2nd, 2021, at 9:25 a.m., Michelle Farwell gave birth to a son. It was the third child for her and her husband, Matthew Farwell, then a 35-year-old detective for the Stoughton Police Department. Stoughton, south of Boston, borders Canton. And right at that town border, we find Canton Woods Apartments. Built in 2007, the complex is 160 units in three buildings. Exactly 12 hours before his son is born, Matthew Farwell is inside apartment 3307 at Canton Woods. He's visiting Sandra Birchmore, a 23-year-old teaching assistant. Farwell had known Birchmore since she was 13 years old, and he was her instructor at the Police Explorers program in Stoughton. Farwell would later say he was at that apartment with one purpose in mind, to end his relationship with Birchmore. Video footage showed Farwell entering the apartment building at 9:14 p.m. and exiting at 9:43 p.m. on that night of February 1st, 2021. 12 hours later, he's with his newborn son. And at the same time, in apartment 3307 in Canton Woods, Sandra Birchmore, 3 months pregnant, is now dead. This is The Case, Season 2, Episode 1. In the side, before we really begin telling this story, in Season 1 of The Case, we investigated the disappearance of Jennifer Fay in November of 1989. We learned she was likely with a young man named Kevin Mailer the night she went missing in Brockton, Massachusetts. We traced Mailer down to Walhalla, South Carolina, and also learned three other people in Mailer's social circle had either died or gone missing. Local law enforcement ruled the deaths as accidental, but we didn't believe that. And on September 7th, 2022, Mailer was charged with the murder of Kevin Craig. The sheriff of Oconee County credited the podcast for its help in the arrest.
But, you know, some of the information that you guys, y'all were very, very investigative in, on your end. And, you know, so y'all uncovered a lot of information.
This might sound like a victory lap, I understand. But here's my larger point. There is no way, and I mean no way, we break that story without enormous cooperation from all the families. Jennifer Fay's sister was available to talk at any time. I can remember meeting, for the first time, the mother and aunt of Faith Roach, a young woman close to Mailer who had gone missing in South Carolina. The three of us were in a parking lot at a police station in Walhalla. Once they knew we were serious about the story, they called everyone who could help us. In 20 minutes, there were dozens of friends and family in that parking lot. April Jones, another Mailer confidant, was found dead in her garage. Her husband walked us through that garage, and her mother and daughter showed us her autopsy photos, put them up right on the hood of a car on the small dirt driveway in Walhalla. We would have been lost without these people. Also this, we were really close to telling another story for this season of the podcast, about 90% done, when Sandra Birchmore crossed our radar. It was too compelling a story to ignore. But unlike Season 1, Sandra's family, for the most part, will not talk. Friends are afraid to speak on the record, or prefer to be anonymous. Unlike Jennifer Fay or the victims in South Carolina, this is currently an active investigation. So the police will not discuss this case with us. And many people have told us they're afraid to speak, that they fear the ramifications of criticizing the Stoughton Police Department. We have uncovered new leads in this case and will continue to do so, but this much is true. Jennifer Fay and the victims in South Carolina had many advocates, and Sandra Birchmore has almost none. And maybe that's the best reason to tell her story.
Law Enforcement Exploring is a worksite-based program that enables young adults to gain hands-on experience for a potential career in law enforcement.
Even though Law Enforcement Exploring was originally created to recruit young adults for law enforcement careers, it's evolved into something much more. I believe the greatest value of the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department Law Enforcement Explorer program is that it gives explorers an opportunity to learn and grow in an environment that is supportive, caring, and secure.
I'll admit I had never heard of the Police Explorers program before the Sandra Birchmore story. I grew up in the town about 30 miles from Stoughton, and no such program existed there when I was a kid. But there are thousands of towns and cities that have the Explorers program, though that number has dwindled over the last few decades, and we'll tell you why in our next episode. But let me give you, if you don't know, a definition of what the Explorers program is. This is from a Wilmington, Massachusetts police press release in 2019. The Explorers program is a nationwide career-oriented program for young men and women ages 14 through 20. The program provides young people with an opportunity to learn about a career in law enforcement and a chance to network with sworn police officers in the community.
I was determined at the time that I was going to go into law enforcement. So I kind of wanted to get a feel for what modern policing was like. Yeah. And, you know, at the time, I really enjoyed it.
That's the voice of Chris Swiderski, one of the founding members of the Stoughton Police Explorers Program. The Explorers Program had existed in Stoughton before Robert Devine took over in 2001, but the numbers have been way down. He told the Brockton Enterprise in a 2001 profile that he had polled the members, asking them if they'd like to participate in a mock police academy. They did, and the numbers jumped. A former drill instructor in the military, Devine, by the end of 2011, had more than 300 kids go through the program. Devine said it was, quote, more than actually training for a career in law enforcement. Some kids find a home with the Explorers. According to people we've talked to, Devine considered himself a father figure, not only with the Explorers, but also in his role as a school resource officer in Stoughton. And in 2010, when Sandra Birchmore, 13 years old, became a member of the Explorers, she was looking for a father figure. She was raised by a single mother, Denise, in Stoughton, though her grandmother and aunt also lived with them. Denise and Sandra are both quoted in a 2006 Stoughton Journal story about a program called Strengthening Families, a 14-week program designed to reduce negative factors for children in high-risk families. Denise is quoted. She says she likes the fact that they show you what your tools are. Instead of yelling at your child, for example, sit down and talk it out. If you are both angry, instead of trying to work out the situation right there and then, take a time out and come back to deal with it. Sandra was just 9 at the time and said it was great because the youth got to play games and put on puppet shows while learning different skills. She said it was really fun, and on the very last day, she got a certificate.
She was always smiling. Like, I honestly never saw her angry or anything. She loved talking. She loved telling people what was going on in her life. She got very excited about things.
That's Sandra's cousin, Kelly. And I actually think this is important and will remain a theme throughout this series. No matter what was going on in Sandra's life, and often it was deeply troubling, and obviously ended tragically, she remained optimistic. Her mother was sick throughout her childhood. She had no relationship with her birth father, and her stepfather died when she was young. This is a highly vulnerable 13-year-old girl entering the program. And looking at pictures of her from that year, 2010, she looks really young for 13. Honestly, no more than 9 or 10 years old than most. I'm sure she thought she was finding a safe place, surrounded by police officers, men she could trust. Instead, she was entering a den of predators, not just Robert Devine, whom you'll learn more about as the series goes on, but Devine had a special guest instructor with the Explorers, a member of Devine's first Explorers group, Matthew Farwell. In 2021, Sandra was working as a teaching assistant at East Middle School in Sharon, Massachusetts. Here's the mother of a lifelong friend of Sandra's. She asked to remain anonymous for this podcast.
Sandra couldn't wait to go into those kids every day. She had an energy. She used her own money to do the materials. She was so excited, and these kids loved her because she had an energy like no other.
She had not, however, shown up for work on February 2nd or 3rd. And on the morning of February 4th, Ensley Cotard, a patrolman for the Canton Police Department, was working when he received a well-being check at 9:45 a.m. from Michael Hawking, the school resource officer of Sharon. Sandra was not at work for a third straight day, and attempts to call her went straight to voicemail. Hawking provided Cotard with Birchmore's address at Canton Woods Apartments. At 11 a.m., Cotard and Canton officer Mike Brady knocked and announced their presence at Birchmore's apartment, but that led to no response. Cotard contacted his sergeant, who told Cotard to attempt to locate her car in the parking lot. The car was found by Cotard. He noticed there was snow still on and around the car that appeared undisturbed. This is February 4th, remember. The last time it had snowed was on Monday, February 1st into early Tuesday morning, February 2nd. Kotar was able to obtain keys for the apartment from building management and entered at 11 a.m. Immediately, he noticed the apartment was disheveled and largely unkempt, with two house cats running around. The bedroom door was closed. The bathroom door was open. Kotar first checked to see if Bertram was there. She was not. He then opened the bedroom door. The lights were off, and saw Birchmore seated on the floor with what Kotar referred to in his report as some sort of belt, lanyard, string, rope, secured tightly around her neck, which was secured tightly to the handle of the door of the bedroom closet. It was obvious to Kotar that Birchmore was dead. He noticed lividity about the skin and face, rigor about the body's extremities, and a large pool of dry blood around her mouth. Canton firefighter Daniel Whitley arrived and pronounced Sandra dead at 11:46 a.m. The chief medical examiner ruled it suicide, asphyxia by hanging. No life-saving measures were taken. One other note, Sergeant Michael Lank arrived at the scene after Cotard. In his report, he wrote the countertops in the kitchen were almost entirely covered with junk mail, medication, and some trash. But there was also a photograph, an ultrasound, with Birchmore's name and date of birth on the picture of the unborn child. The day after Sandra's body was discovered, Stoughton Police Chief Donna McNamara was contacted by a detective from the Massachusetts State Police. Once family and friends learned about Sandra, some contacted police to let them know about her relationship with Matthew Farwell. It's interesting here to note that no one who contacted the police on the 4th, the day her body was found, had any idea Farwell had been in Sandra's apartment the last night she was alive. But they, at least people we've talked to, knew she was pregnant, in a relationship with a married police officer, and now suddenly dead. McNamara, on February 5th, directs Deputy Chief Brian Holmes to conduct an internal investigation into, quote, the matter of the unattended death of Sandra Birchmore. The report, heavily redacted to the public, arrives 19 months later. By then, Robert Devine had already resigned from Stoughton Police Department, as had Matthew Farwell. And the third member of the department also resigned for his inappropriate actions with Sandra Birchmore. He was also a former explorer and guest instructor for the program. His name? William Farwell, Matthew's twin brother.
All right, Sergeant, I need 75-meter perimeter. Get these guys
back.
Give me 75 meters!
Get back!
75 meters!
You tell him to get on his knees and touch the sky, okay?
That is a clip from The Hurt Locker, the 2009 Oscar-winning film that tells the story of a bomb diffusion unit in Iraq, the U.S. Army Explosive Ordnance Team. Prior to joining the Stoughton Police Department, both Matthew and William Farwell served as Explosive Ordnance Team leaders overseas. Here's a quote from William Farwell to the Stoughton Journal in 2012. Matt excelled in a small but elite field in the military, and his legend and footsteps were hard to follow when I made the leap from military police community over to the Explosive Ordnance Disposal Team. By 2012, Matt Farrell was a police officer in Stoughton. He was also still active with the Explorers. Devine told the Stoughton Journal in that same 2012 story that the Farwell brothers, quote, donated their time as physical and drill instructors and also taught an explosives class. They bring in bomb robots, blast jackets, and shields. They are very good at what they do. The 2012 story ends with this. It appears that Stoughton Police Chief Paul Chastney's promised to hire the very best that exhibited in full force here. Stoughton got the police officer who was fully trained, had an impressive military background, and more experience than almost anyone his age would come to the department with. Welcome to Stoughton, Officer Matt Farwell. At the time, Farwell was 26 years old. In that same year, he was already in a sexual relationship with Sandra Birchmore, who was 15 years old.
She was very, like, social and, like, fun. Like, she had, like, a very, like, high-energy personality.
She was so freaking smart, like, so smart. Like, she would answer all the cop talk. She would always tell stories about cops this, cops that. Like,
she was a very unselfish person. She was so excited about everything she did. She had an excitement. She was concerned for everybody she met.
We've talked to dozens of Sandra's friends, and everyone said a lot of what you just heard from three people who knew Sandra very well. Kind, sweet, funny, loving. However, there was another side. Sandra Birchmore was an overshare. She could make people uncomfortable. I can read the reports and the text exchanges she had with friends and recognize what is screamingly obvious from 30,000 feet. This was a girl, and then a young woman, who was emotionally stunted, more than a little immature. In interviews with people who knew her and reading the reports following her death, she struggled to keep friends. She could be emotional, angry. She could ask too many questions and offer too much about herself. This was amplified when she became pregnant in December of 2020. She began telling friends and others almost immediately. On February 5th, 2021, Detective Matthew Dunn interviewed a teacher at East School in Sharon. Sandra was in her first year at the school, as was his teacher. When she was asked to describe her relationship with Sandra, she said she thought Sandra to be a little off and overshared a lot of personal information, details of her personal life, even on her first day of employment at the school. Without this teacher asking, Sandra told her she was dating a police officer who was 10 or 11 years older than she was. She told her that her boyfriend was married with two children. Sandra told her she wanted to get pregnant with her boyfriend, and he finally agreed. When she did tell her she was pregnant, it was just 4 or 5 weeks into the pregnancy, which the teacher found odd. And this was happening over and over. She reached out to friends she hadn't spoken to in years to tell them about the pregnancy. She ran into a mother and old friend at the supermarket and told her. She told people at her apartment complex where she had lived for just a few months. She just wanted people to know. She was also determined to have Matt Farwell's name on the birth certificate. And Farwell wanted no part of that.
He did not want to sign the birth certificate, is what she told me. And then that message also showed, like,
right,
it was a problem.
That's Sandra's hairstylist. The two began to talk more when she was pregnant. They would usually communicate via Facebook Messenger. And she showed us the content of those messages when we met with her at the salon in Stoughton in late September.
So it was looks like a pretty frequent correspondence, though.
Yeah, I would always reply to her. I knew she didn't have anything, and she was planning her baby shower.
Yeah.
As is the case with anyone in their early 20s, Sandra communicated constantly via text, Snapchat, Facebook Messenger. It's a blizzard of messages, not surprising, given she was living alone the last few months of her life and her penchant for oversharing. Co-workers, old friends, new friends, estranged family members. She messaged with Matthew Farwell thousands of times in the last year of her life. She messaged with Robert Devine as recently as 2 weeks before she died. He wanted to meet her at a local restaurant. And she had just communicated with William Farwell a week before her death. And on the snowy night of February 1st, 2021, at 9 p.m., she sent a message to a coworker asking if there would be school the next day. It would be the last message she would ever send.
That's it?
Yep.
Go ahead.
That's my producer and I in October, knocking on what was Sandra Birchmore's third floor apartment at Canton Woods. We were hoping the current tenants would be home and let us in. However, we were unsuccessful. Carlos Verissimo was a maintenance supervisor of the building Sandra lived in, the Canton Woods apartments. 2 days after her body was discovered, he assisted detectives Jonathan McCourt and Matthew Dunn in reviewing video footage from the building. The video only captures the front lobby. Sandra is seen multiple times on Sunday, January 31st. She leaves the building at 9:51 a.m., talking on the phone, returns to the building at 10:08, carrying a large box. She leaves again at 10:11, comes back 3 hours later, again on the phone, holding two pizza boxes. She leaves at 4:39 p.m. and returns 2 minutes later, texting on her phone. She is seen only once on Monday, February 1st, at 5:46 p.m. She's holding a snow brush, presumably going to clean the outside of her car. It's the last time she's seen alive. Verissimo recognizes everyone on video that enters the lobby except for one person. That individual is described as a tall, burly male. He's wearing work boots, jeans, a black jacket, and has a black hood over his head. He's wearing a mask and not wearing gloves. He enters the building at 9:14 p.m. and exits at 9:43. It is later confirmed, of course, to be Matthew Farwell.
I've known her since we were like 6 or 7 years old. I know her patterns of behavior. I know what she's been through in her life. She was going to kill herself. She would have killed herself when her mother died or when her grandmother died. She wasn't going to kill herself over this, over a fight with Matthew.
Never once did she try to commit, kill herself.
Right.
Since that I know before.
No,
so
yeah.
Now you're talking, she's with child.
Right.
And was ecstatic about having a baby, and now she's going to kill herself and the baby? It doesn't make any sense to me.
Okay, here's what I keep going back to. Well, a couple things. Sandra was needy for sure. Had to tell everyone everything, to the point where she lost friendships and needed supervisors at work to tell her to stop sharing details of her life. always texting friends, etc. Matt Farwell goes into the apartment to end things. The relationship is over. Now, he's done this before. We have friends telling authorities and us about the fights they would have with breakups and inevitable reconciliations. I'll tell you about one in just a moment. But first, I'm to believe this breakup is so definitive, so clear, that Farwell leaves and Sandra reaches out to no one about it, texts no one, messages no one. Remember, her last text exchange is at 9 p.m. that night, 14 minutes before Farwell arrives. Nothing after, to no one. So she breaks up with Farwell, goes right into her bedroom, puts a belt around her neck, and commits suicide. Kills herself and her unborn baby. Also this, it snowed a foot on February 1st. Matthew Farwell drove in a snowstorm with his wife 9 months pregnant to go to Sandra's apartment to deliver a message he's delivered before. It could have done easily via text. Last two things. Remember when video footage showed Sandra entering her apartment building with a package on January 31st? That package was a baby car seat. And lastly, there's this. Sandra told a friend she had spoken to Farwell about the pregnancy a few days after Christmas. They argued a bit, and she kicked him out of the apartment. But before he left, Sandra said Farwell had told her, "I wish you would kill yourself. I wish you were dead." Sandra Birchmore's friends and family don't believe she killed herself. I don't believe it either. On the next episode of The Case.
This is Deputy Police Chief Robert Devine, and he's going to read you...
Oh, the places you'll go.
No one's going to believe you. No one's going to know, you know, this ever happened. We can make things look like, you know, an accident.
Attorneys have reached a settlement worth more than $3.5 million for seven victims of the LMPD Explorer sex abuse scandal.
New tonight, the Louisville Courier-Journal reports that the Louisville Police and the County Attorney's Office hid at least 738,000 records documenting sexual abuse of Explorer Scouts by two police officers.
Police Explorer program that a Trumbull police officer presided over is being brought to a stop on the heels of his child sexual assault case.
You know, there's police officers that I thought I could trust that have known me since I was in, like, high school.
Miss Birchmore was a vulnerable person who had one constant in her life since childhood. Her unwavering admiration of police officers, of those serving the military, people in uniform.
The Case is available on Apple Podcasts and wherever podcasts can be heard. You can also find us at thecasepodcast.com and on Twitter and Facebook at The Case Podcast is the address there. If you have any information about Sandra Birchmore or anything related to this story, you can reach out to us on any of our social media platforms or our email, thecase@barstoolsports.com.